Welcome to University Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri, Director of Communications and Alumni Relations here at the University of Malta. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research projects, their international networks, about their aims and aspirations. I shall also be hearing from staff and students and visitors to campus about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. I'm pleased to have with me today on University Matters, Edward Mifsud. Just a few words about my guest. Mr. Mifsud is a lecturer in biology at Junior College. His first degree was BSc in Chemistry and Biology, which he followed up with a PGCE and later an MSc and a Diploma in Administration and Management. Currently, he is working on his doctoral thesis at the University of London's Institute of Education. In October 2009, he took up an appointment at Junior College, the University's Junior College, and now teaches biology A-level there. Welcome to the programme.
Thank you for the appointment.
You have some very interesting research, which I'm really looking forward to talking to you about, because it's a subject very dear to my heart, education through museums and what people actually get out of a museum visit. You have done your research with IOE, the Institute of Education in London, and you focused on out-of-school informal learning in science, particularly in biology and this museum learning. Before we, however, start talking specifically about that research, I'd really like to hear from you what motivated you to go for biology as a subject, because I mean I can imagine that it's fascinating, but it's interesting to hear how people come to these subjects. You went for it when you were a very small child, or did you go for it later on in life?
Well, I think like various other important naturalists, and I've researched that and found it as a common factor, it all starts, I think, early on. And it's the exposure, the experiences that you get when you're young, first years. What I mean is that my father had a small field, and he used to go there and spend some time and plant some vegetables, etc. And I used to go with him there on weekends, particularly. So I was used to being exposed to a natural environment where you are away from urban environment, from noise. You just listen to natural sounds, like birds, water going by. So I think that started me off. Thinking of it now, when one is exposed to nature in the early years, then that sort of influences you towards natural things.
Were you interested in looking at the plants and opening up their stems and things, or were you interested in catching frogs?
Well, a little bit of both, I think, to be honest. I remember myself running after butterflies and capturing a few of those, but because I was attracted by the beauty of some of our very rich natural species environment in Malta. So you mentioned frogs. There was a small pool and rock pools, and also a small reservoir where you had the opportunity to see in the rainy season tadpoles. So these small organisms, which unless there is that kind of environment, you won't be able to see anywhere. You had the opportunity there to be isolated from the normal day-to-day hustle and bustle and
sound pollution of the urban environment.
And, you know, and which sometimes don't even give you time to think.
No.
And I think that was something.
The
start of it. Then, obviously, later on, and through schooling and then science, so sort of formal education in the first years of the second year, because I don't recall that we used to have formal science education in the primary in my days. I started straight away, I was interested in scientific areas, so I remember that one of my favorite lessons were the science lessons, which were basic science lessons on basic organisms and chemistry and principles of physics, you know, the integrated science that you have in the first couple of years of secondary education. I was instantly interested in this area. And then obviously I had to choose which subjects to continue with in the following years. And instantly I went for the science subjects, and they've always interested me, and I've remained interested in the scientific all the way. So,
do you think that the teaching of biology has changed in since those years when you were at school? Obviously, you're still a young man, it's not that long ago, but do you think that the methodologies of teaching biology have improved over the last years?
Yes, I guess so. Very much so, especially with media technology. Back then, I remember even the opportunities to be in a lab were very limited. And today, because of the requirements of the MedTech, you have to go to a lab. When I was at school, I remember we had very little opportunities to be in the lab. And then we'll talk about this later as well. And not so many opportunities to go out of the school and experience nature directly. So I think one important thing, is certainly the students have more opportunity for direct, hands-on science learning in chemistry, biology, and physics, because being a requirement for their levels, so they will need to do that anyway. So that I think was a very important positive thing. And then regarding the methods, I mean like delivery, yes, the use of technology has improved it a lot. Why? Because science is very visual. So having visual aids, having technology, being able to use projectors to show films, use PowerPoints, etc., is very useful. I remember that I had experienced it myself in the beginning of my teaching career, that it was very time-wasting and time-consuming, I would say, not wasting, to draw a specimen on the board. And, you know, certain specimens are quite complicated in biology, so it takes...
Not necessarily. Not all biology teachers are artists, after
exactly,
all.
And many people find it difficult. In my case, I had an advantage because I liked art as well, by the way. And I was good at drawing. I used to do well in drawing as well at school. So that wasn't a disadvantage on my point. But obviously for others, it wasn't. Now, today, you have a lot of resources with very good drawings and actual photographs from actual specimens, electron microscopy, etc. So that's really, really helpful. And you can find video clips and animations. Although all of that is very recent. So today we are using that technology all the time. In my days and even when I started off, that wasn't available. So I think that really helps.
So there have been improvements. We're talking here about the formal classroom, lecture room context. Mm-hmm. Actually, your research deals with the opposite, really, with the informal learning processes which are supposed to take place within the museum context. What drew you to that kind of analysis? Why were you interested then in turning from the lecture room to the informal learning side of things?
I think that, and even the research showed this very clearly, that learning in an informal setting, an out-of-school environment, is much more enjoyable. Students in general, whenever they were asked, and you see various reports and surveys and research, shows that if you ask pupils what they enjoy most in their learning, they will always put the field trips on top. It seems that obviously they like much more to be in an informal environment where they can experience things freely, much more than being in school or in a classroom environment. And I think that area we still need to develop further here locally. I feel that we are not giving enough importance to this aspect of learning. Whilst if you see what happens in other countries, particularly I'm more aware of what's happening in the UK, children are taken out on field trips more frequently. And this aspect of learning, and also then you can take it to museum learning, because obviously museums are not the only of the setting for this kind of learning. It's something which is regular. It's norm. There's a tradition of taking kids and to the museum. And in fact, if you had to go to one of the main British museums, like British Museum, Science Museum, Natural History Museum, Victoria and Albert Museum, the big ones in London, when you go there and you go there during the week, the place will be swarmed with young children of all ages, from very young to secondary. So that it really impresses you, because the museum is the place for students, for really, and you, a lot of the people going there, you will see a big proportion of the visitors as students. So I think that aspect of learning out of the school and going to see the actual thing as much as possible, being aware of what science is, because science is a practical thing, and not only experiencing science from the book or from photograph or hearing about it all the time. I believe it's very important, because it will certainly stimulate students to learn about science, not necessarily to become scientists, but first of all, to be aware of our world. In science, we're trying to explain how the world functions. So I think to be aware of certain aspects of the world, and then also therefore to be aware environmentally, for example, that will certainly help. So it's good to have these experiences, because I believe that growing up, children will become better aware of their world, and therefore better aware and receptive towards these large issues that we have now about environmental protection, global warming, etc. I think that people tend not to be sensitive, because they haven't been given enough exposure of what it means to pollute, to destroy your environment. Being all the time in an urbanized environment and alienated from nature, and in Malta, since we have so much urban development, I think a lot of our kids are a little bit detached from nature. I believe that that would be something important to work on.
One of the problems about this, as far as attitudes go, is that some people would say, oh, well, children like going to the museum because they don't really have to do anything, and they just walk around and go home again. What it needs to be is a positive experience, in the sense that there should be some sort of learning outcomes. And people are frightened of museums because the traditional methods of learning don't actually fit within the museum context. So there has to be a rethinking of what the children are going to experience, or how they're going to experience it, so that at the end of the day, when they walk out of the door, they're going to have some learning outcomes. And that perhaps requires resources that we don't have so much here, perhaps in Malta. And it requires not only resources, but also a mindset, a new mindset.
Yes, I perfectly agree. Unfortunately, field trips or out-of-school trips or whatever, something that's going to happen outside the school, people tend to look at them as a waste of time. And that's really unfortunate. Now, to be frank, they could be a waste of time if they are not well organized. So, being honest, a field trip or an educational experience outside the school, whatever it is, unless it's well organized, can be just a walkabout in the place, going out, and that's it. You take along with you home very little. And I believe that also that is an area where we need to improve and we can work on. I know that there are certain places where there are programs and there are a certain level of organized work, but I think we're still very, very, very far away from what's happening in other places like Britain. Now, obviously, I don't expect us to be, because there's a huge tradition, but we have to start from somewhere, I believe. So, yes, if the visits are well planned, and when you go to the museum, you find the receptive environment and people ready there to make the learning experience work, so that can be a very positive experience. But at this moment in time, I think, and I can speak about the Natural History Museum particularly more than other places, because I've done my data collection all there, we're not in a position where when you go to the museum, there are people ready for you everything is planned, there is a program, and when you take a class there, the class know what they're going to do, there are organized programs for them, they have resources, and so therefore the educational experience is very well planned, structured, etc. Right up this moment, now, teachers sort of have to do, if there is any preparation that will be done, it's all on the teacher. The teachers have to plan that, they have to plan all their resources. And obviously, a primary class teacher doesn't have all that time available to prepare all this material, because this means that there is a lot of work to be done. So, to improve on this, and I think to make the experiences more enjoyable, and then people, the benefits, I think, will be more evident, we need to have a more organized educational experience in our museums. And therefore, the museums need to have people that are responsible to deliver the educational experience, as you would find when you go to the various museums that I've mentioned earlier.
This brings us on now, really, to the specific research which you've been doing, which is about dioramas. If you could briefly explain what a diorama is, really.
Yes. Well, a diorama, and I worked with the natural history diorama, because a diorama is a broad term, is a setting where the specimens, instead of being placed on a shelf in a glass box and with a tag beneath them, they are set in a natural environment. So you have a backdrop, normally with a painted background, and then you have actual specimens that are constructed in a close to natural setting as possible. So you have trees, you may have streams, you may have flowers, and then obviously animals preserved, and that would mean, depending on the setting that you have chosen to show, you will have the various animals present in that environment. So the idea is that you present the specimens in the natural environment, as one would expect them to be if you had to go to the actual thing in reality. Now, it still remains a constructed environment, so the dioramas is still a setting which people produce. So there is a lot of really, sometimes, debate of how really natural that is, or how close to natural it is, because it's still a constructed environment. And there are some dioramas that have been intended to show some particular place and trying to reproduce it as close as possible. But there are other environments who just give you a sample, sort of a type of a typical environment, like the ones we have locally here, are showing typical Maltese environments. There are five settings, and they don't really show one specific place. Whereas, for example, there's a field, rural yard, a valley, bastion, a sand dune. But it could be anywhere. So the settings, how they're the ones that we have here, have been constructed to show a typical local environment, not a specific one, where you can find some species that we have locally in Malta, and species meaning mammals, insects, amphibians.
What you've done in your research is you've presented these dioramas to the visiting children, and then recorded afterwards. So you haven't spoken about them before, not to influence their approach. And then you've asked them questions afterwards to see what they got out of it, what they understood from them, what were the questions you asked?
Well, actually what I did is they were asked to draw. So the main source of data is a drawing. They drew a picture of wildlife. So that we asked to draw a scene of wildlife before, and then they were given time to experience the diorama, the area. They had enough time, about 10 minutes or so, and we obviously introduced in small groups so that every student had a chance to view the diorama properly, and then afterwards asked again to choose a favorite one and draw their favorite one, because obviously since the drawings were done on site in the museum, there wouldn't have been enough time to draw everything, because even drawing one picture did take some time. So the actual drawings were done on site in the museum, actually in an area close, because where the Aramos are is a rather restricted area. So then we had to use the outside hall, the bird hall, so that they could draw there. And from the drawings, you can see that there's certain dioramas were drawn by certain students, preferably to others. You can immediately say which of the dioramas had a larger impact,
most attractive
compared to the others. But then, after that, I also asked every student about their drawing. So we had an informal interview.
One-to-one, on their own,
so that they explain what they actually drew. Because children can draw things, and you might imagine that what they drew is something, but they actually wanted to show something else. So you really have to ask the children what they wanted to show, and what the scene is, and then the different aspects, different structures drawn, what they represent, if they represent a tree, a bird, a dog, or whatever. There you get a reproduction or sort of an expression of the mental model produced by the children whilst viewing the specimen. Because when we view something, we tend to build a mental picture of that. And different people will probably build a different picture depending on what attracts them and how they see things. So the drawing gives you an idea of that. Together with that also then, but this was done before, ask the children to list the various animals and plants that they know of in a very basic web form, because the children are used to building a web, a basic web, and then use those to write a short story composition in Maltese and in English. And that gives an idea of their knowledge of wildlife at that moment.
Before.
Then obviously the diagram gives more information. And this was done because drawing, being a particular task, can limit students from showing things because they can't actually reproduce them. Not because they haven't been able to notice them or because they don't know about them. So that gives you a bit more information of what actually they know about, and then the drawings themselves give you an idea of how they are picturing things, and they're showing things, and certain things, interesting things come out because they reproduce things in their drawings which aren't exactly close to what they've exactly, because I mean they've just seen the drawing, and when they go out a couple of minutes after, they draw, and you can see variations and inclusions of things that are in there. For example, one aspect that is evident is that a lot of students like to include the sun. How important the sun is in a place like our country, we have so much that sun all year round. It's influenced that although in none of the settings there is a picture of the sun still features. So then here comes another aspect, that is the cultural influence on drawing. And there have been various research projects done, and the aspect of culture does have an effect on how children represent animals and plants. Also depending very much on which animals are valued in that culture, or how much animals and plants are valued in that culture. For example, in Malta I noticed that birds tend to have a larger influence. A lot of students drew birds. That could be because there is a lot of talk in Malta about birds. Part of it stems from the hunting issue, etc. And even the museum itself actually has a big display of birds. So there, this cultural thing comes in, and it shows how varied and complex the whole issue can come. That is, viewing nature sometimes is also culturally influenced.
Absolutely.
And it depends on where you come from. And again, Malta being quite an urbanized place, I think that can also have an effect. Now, all these small features are coming out. And even when you ask the children, they do express themselves and tell you things which show these influences. So basically, this is how the whole project was structured. And
when you've done the analysis. At the moment, so you're still working on it. Will you be able to go back to the Natural History Museum and tell them about which might then influence their approach to the presentation of materials within the museum?
Yes, of course. Naturally, I'm in very good contact with the curator, with John Borge. And when the results are at hand, I will obviously present to him the results and then hopefully use those results to move on to perhaps improve or change things to make the whole settings more appealing. I know that there are plans that in the future the Natural History Museum will be moved to a newer, more modern place. And then, as we have discussed informally with John, probably that would be then the best time to put in new ideas and construct settings in a new place, because the main problem with the place is that the place is restricted in space. So even if you would like to do things, and as they probably would know, that there is part of the building which can't be used because there are structural problems. In fact, it's being done up right now. So a diorama is something which requires space. And if you see the dioramas in America, Chicago, New York, except Field Museum, these normally use quite a big area because if you want to display large animals, you need area. The ones we have here are rather small. So I think, yes, obviously, I hope my work will go on to improve museum education. And also, more than that, the way that the education system in general looks at these experiences. Because then, after all, we want the schools and various education institutions to take their pupils more frequently, at least, I would say, once in their lifetime, to experience these things. And that, but not only as far as museums are concerned, but even other settings. I mean, we have other places where going to the actual field would be also interesting.
Well, unfortunately, we run out of time. There are so many different aspects I would like to talk about, and we needed an hour instead of half an hour. But I'd like to thank Edward Mifsud for coming on University Matters on Campus FM today to talk about the subject of biology in a museum setting. Thank you. Thank you for listening to today's programme. I do hope you can join us again next week for another in the series, University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.